Welcome to this month's episode of Title Now. I'm Melissa Murphy with the Fund. And through these webinars, we try to provide information about any issue that might be of interest to the real estate transactional industry, whether it's breaking news, updates on existing issues, or just things that I think would be of interest to fund members. A reminder that we push the audio out on our podcast, which is also conveniently called Title Now, and you can get our podcast anywhere that you subscribe to your other podcasts. It's free, so please join. And then you can go back and listen again to the content, or it certainly makes it easier to share the content with friends and colleagues that you think might want to hear what we talked about. So what are we talking about today? Well, the 2024 legislative session wrapped up in early March, and highlights from the session, they're always fun to talk about every year. It was busy this year, but not in the same way that it was last year. And my experience tells me that every session sort of has its own personality. But either way, it's good to hear what went on. So as we're chatting today, please post your questions in the question panel over to the right on your screen, and we will try to get to them at some point in the conversation today. But if not, I will follow up with you after the webinar. I am very pleased to have as my guest today, Representative Will Robinson from Bradenton. Rep. Robinson has served in the Florida House of Representatives since 2018. Equally important, Rep. Robinson is a fund member and has been for a long time. And I think he is probably the go-to person for many of his colleagues in the legislature about matters related to real estate. And a fun fact, he's run about 10 marathons. So he's got a lot of endurance, and you need that when you're in the legislature, right? And I've had the pleasure and privilege of working with Rep. Robinson on several bills. Last year was a particularly intensive year, but this year was no different. So I was really happy he agreed to be my guest today and talk about this year's legislative session. So Rep. Robinson, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Melissa. We did this last year on, I believe, deed fraud bill, and I'm actually joining you for my law firm. And it's always good to be back home. We just finished a 60-day legislative session. And I think Florida is similar to other states. We have a fixed day session, unlike Washington, D.C., for instance. We got to get in. We got to get out. We got to get our bills through in that 60-day process or they die. And so it's always interesting, like you said, to talk about the session. I've been doing that a lot the past couple weeks as I've been back home in Bradenton to talk to folks about what we did. And like the title of this seminar, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So we always have different things in different sessions, and this one was no different.
So where should we start? The good, the bad, or the ugly? Where do you want to start?
Well, it's always hard to describe it this way, because in many ways I'm talking about two-thirds of bad things, whether it's bad or ugly. But let's kind of start with the ugly. And I only mention that ugly is the word in the sense that, legislative sausage can be ugly to look at or ugly to experience. And we have a number of bills every session where they may start out a certain way and then they end a different way, whether that's good or whether that's bad. And the one bill I wanted to talk about, just because it may be interest of to fund members, certainly was interest to me, was the estoppel bill. And as you recall, several years ago, there was some significant legislation that capped how much management company or estoppel company could charge for those services. And I think it was CPI was allowed moving forward. Well, this year, a bill was filed that I believe lowered the amount that could be charged, got rid of CPI, and did a lot of other things with it. And it moved very quickly through the Senate. Actually, I believe it was on the Senate floor before it even passed the first committee stop in the House. And actually, that came through my subcommittee first, Civil Justice. And as you can imagine, with a bill like this, I think I must have met with 20 different management companies. They emailed all of my constituents that were in associations. So put a lot of pressure on me. And you know, their philosophy was if you lower the estoppel fee, what's going to happen is it's going to be a hidden fee inside the association in their budget or something else. So we in the House had a different approach. We restored the existing estoppel fee. We put CPA back in. There was some very troublesome language in the Senate version that talked about no additional fees that a closing agent can charge. And that was very sensitive to me and frankly, a few of the folks in my area, because not to get too technical, but that some of those definitions weren't even properly defined in that chapter. And it wouldn't allow, for instance, a company that an agent may farm out to do estoppel services and charge a minimal fee to produce the report of the estoppel letter along with any other issues that may come up. So that was very problematic. So we had that approach in the House, and the Senate had their approach. We actually passed our approach off the House floor and sent it over to the Senate, because obviously the bills have to match. They can't be different bills. They have to match. So we sent our version over to the Senate and what's called a message. And the Senate basically stripped what we did and sent it back to the House. And we declined to take it up. So the bill died.
Wasn't that on the very last day of the session?
It was. It was on the very last day of the session. The bill died. And believe me, there were stakeholders on both sides that were getting with me and certainly the speaker and Chair Gregory, Judiciary Chair, to see where the bill was going. And would we accept the Senate's version that had now pinged back to us in this legislative sausage making that we were doing? And the bill ended up dying. And so that's kind of an example that happens, not a lot, but it happens frequently during a session where the House and the Senate can't agree. And frankly, I actually think that's good. You shouldn't have just a unicameral version in Florida. Sometimes you have different ideas, different versions, and we have different bills that are versions of the bill that are making their way parallel through the legislative process. And many times, you negotiate and figure out one version goes forward. But in this case, we just couldn't figure out our differences. We ran out of time. As you said, Melissa, the 60th day was here and the bill died.
And one other comment on that. There are a lot of bills, I'm sure, that the two sides of the legislature can't agree on. But in the real estate arena, my experience is estoppel seems to bring out a lot of emotional feelings. And while we're arguing over the fee for an estoppel certificate, and a lot of your colleagues there up in Tallahassee is like, why are we arguing about this? But boy, it brings out some emotion in people. So
it does. I get it. As an agent, it's frustrating to me when I can't get an estoppel letter timely. But I think we had some good law in place. Should there be some tweaks moving forward? Absolutely. I think we will continue to look at this. But this bill was probably too big of a change for the industry. And that's probably why it ended up dying.
Agree. So that's the ugly, if you want to call it that. What's the bad? What are you sort of going to use as an example of that?
Well, I'll use an example. And frankly, one of my jobs as a chairman is to either block or to help improve certain bills. And one bill that hit our radar very early on, Melissa, was the notary bill. And this bill had several elements to it. It bumped up the penalties for improperly using a notary stamp. I forgot what the existing penalties are, but they seemed pretty light to me. And to me, most problematically, the portion of the bill had a requirement for every notary to do a log, and frankly went further, an electronic log. And I was actually approached to file the bill, and I expressed my discomfort with the log portion of it, because I didn't think that it really accomplished the goal of the bill. The goal of the bill was to build on what you had mentioned, Melissa, which was a bill that I got through last session on deed fraud. And that was an incredibly big bill in this session. It was a speaker priority. We've talked about it. At least I've talked about it. I'm sure you've educated your fund members about the components of the bill, but it had four or five features to the bill. It added, you have to write your post office address now for witnesses. And there's a summary process now, an easier process if you actually get all tied up into an action where your property was sold out in front of you. It has a pilot program in Lee County. So it had some good components to it. And the bill sponsor came to me and said, well, you need a log because if you have to show the prosecutor what you did as a notary, they can use that as evidence. And I really didn't like it because I said, well, what happens if you don't do it? I'm a notary myself and we're running back and forth. We're trying to notarize things. We're doing dozens of closings, sometimes a day. What if I forget to do that? And why does it have to be electronic? I was a little bit sensitive that there may be one or two vendors in Florida that perform this service. And was this bill kind of approaching it from that direction? So I really didn't think that it solved the problem the bill sponsor was trying to solve. Because frankly, I said, why don't you just subpoena the records that have been notarized as opposed to the log? What does the log really get for you? And so the bill kind of got bogged down on that issue. I actually kind of liked the portion of the bill that increased the criminal penalties. And a funny little story about this. I wasn't really certain what the right penalty should be. I'm not a criminal defense attorney. I don't know a lot about that area. And so we had a proposed increased penalty. And I went down the hall to the chair of criminal justice because I'm the chair of civil justice and the staff director. And she looked at me and she said, Chairman, I think you've set the bar a little high here. We don't need to be sending folks to jail for 25 years if they properly use their notary stamp equal to manslaughter. So I said, oh, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So let's back it down a little bit. And so we had, I thought, some good, a portion of that bill that I think was good. A portion of the bill was bad. And just like with the estoppel bill, the Senate and the House could not agree on the final product. The Senate wanted to keep the log portion of it in. The House did not. And so that bill ended up dying. And I call it a bad bill just in the sense that I just thought a portion of it was bad. And it suffered the same fate as, by the way, most bills do in Florida. It died.
What were our statistics? I forget. Shoot, I'm not sure I wrote those. Yeah, here it is. This year, 1,900 bills were filed and 325 passed.
Right.
And so, those still are in the process of being sent to the governor in batches for his approval or not. But yeah, that's certainly true. One comment I'll make on the notary bill. I was equally concerned about the requirement that it be an electronic journal, because there are thousands of notaries here in Florida, some of whom don't work in an office and have a computer and have the ability to have an electronic log. And so that just seemed to me to be an unrealistic expectation. If you're going to require a log, don't require an electronic one. So maybe that bill will come back and again next year in a more acceptable form. So now we've gotten past the ugly and the bad. Now let's talk about the good. What are some thoughts you have about what good stuff came out of this year's session?
So I think overall it was an outstanding session. I don't think we were on the front pages as much as maybe other sessions, and maybe for most folks that's probably a good thing. But we were very active. I think we passed a very good, solid budget for the state of Florida. The state is now 15th or the 16th largest economy in the world. So it's important that we have a budget. By the way, Melissa, that's our only constitutional requirement that we have in Florida, is to pass a balanced budget. All these other 1,900 or so bills that were filed, those are not necessary. And so we are really, our only charge is to pass a balanced budget, which I think we did a good job this session. And the second thing we normally do, we don't have to do it, but we did it this year like we've done in the past, is a tax package, a very robust tax package to put money back in the Florida taxpayers' hands, like the back-to-school holiday weeks that we've gone accustomed to. There will be a reduction. It wasn't technically in the tax package. It was in another area. The business rent tax which is a tax on tenants when they have to lease commercial property. We're the only state in the country that does that. So that was reduced down a little bit. And of interest, probably the number one topic that anyone brings up to me is property insurance. We passed in the tax package. It'll be a small reduction in the tax that you would have to pay, or your insurance company would have to pay for your policy. So if you're homesteaded property, you should see some tiny relief. I don't want to make it sound too robust, a couple percents here and there that were in the tax package. So I think, and by the way, we have to qualify a lot of this. Neither of those two have been signed by the governor, as most bills. And I'm extra sensitive to this because I've actually had two bills vetoed. So it's always interesting when we talk about bills right after session.
I hope you don't hold the record for that. I hope there's somebody that's had more bills vetoed.
There is another representative that has had two. So it's not a record I want to keep getting higher, but it does happen. And it's the right of the governor. So you got to keep the governor's office involved with what you're doing. That's always important. But I would say from the House's side that the one of the most important issues that may not be as relevant to fund members because it doesn't really touch real estate was our social media ban for minors. It was House Bill 1. There was a lot of testimony, a lot of passionate debate on the impact that social media is having on our children. And when in the House, it's House Bill 1, that means that is the number one priority of the Florida Speaker of the House. So it was a very passionate issue. It actually passed off the House floor pretty easily, like 110-10. It was very, very little opposition. We sent it over to the Senate. The Senate, same thing, had a couple minor changes. So it came back to the House for our approval, which we did. And unusually, the Speaker recessed the House, and we went, those that were supporting the bill went out into the rotunda, and the Speaker and the bill sponsors gave a press conference. And that press conference was really for a person of one, the governor, because the governor had expressed some concerns about parental rights and the ability to have parents control some of those decisions. So we had passed the bill. The bill was now in the governor's hand. And the governor vetoed the bill, which was pretty historic to veto House Bill 1. I don't know if that's been done. It hasn't been done in my 6 years. It certainly hasn't been done in many, many years. And why I call this the good, it's not necessarily the policy of the bill. Now, I voted for the bill, but I call it good because that had that situation where you have a veto of the number one speaker priority had the chance to throw session off the rails. We talked about the budget. We talked about the tax package. The speaker could have held those two issues hostage. I could still be in Tallahassee right now, not serving my great law clients, but serving the great constituents of District 71. I'd still be up there. But thankfully, the speaker met with the governor's team. They figured out a way to compromise on the area, on the issue. We actually had an interesting thing we had to do. We tacked it on to House Bill 3 because House Bill 1 no longer existed anymore. We passed it off the House floor. Actually, I think the 10 no votes came down to 5 no votes. And then the Senate passed it with very little opposition, and the governor signed that bill. So I mention it as good as part of the reason why I love serving in the legislature is that the back and forth, the give and take. You had two presiding officers, the Senate president and the Speaker of the House, that were on top of their games, that were just professionals, that knew that they didn't want to put the members, for instance, someone like me, in the middle of, do I really vote to override? I mean, there was talk about that. Overriding a Republican governor, a conservative, just like I am in my own party, and not having to put us in the middle of something like that. So I call that the good because that could have just destroyed session, and we'd be talking all about that, not about the good budget, good tax package that we passed over the last few weeks.
That's very interesting to get that perspective on those bills, because all I knew about them was what I read about in the paper, and it did not implode or explode, whichever adverb you want to use there. So, yeah, I would agree that that's good. I also think there was some good stuff in the real estate arena. So let's chat about some of those things. Where would you start there?
So actually, two of the bills that I carried, one was in response to a couple bad appellate decisions that took the common law doctrine of merger, which we all know about. I don't think I need to explain it to this group, and said that that could impact, for instance, declarations of restrictions. So because of the doctrine of merger, you couldn't have a declarant or developer issue easements to itself. And just the flux that that would put or has put in the commercial real estate industry, that bill was one that I carried, and we got through, I think, with one no vote on the House side and a couple no votes on the Senate side. It frankly has become a little bit of a battle in Miami, as normally things happen in Miami, a lawsuit between the developer and the association. The association wants to get rid of some easements by doctrine of merger. The developer says, no, that's what we recorded. That's what everyone agreed with. And so that bill hopefully helps settle some very unsettling law in our industry. So that's one bill that hasn't been signed that we hope makes it across the finish line.
I don't think it's been sent to the governor yet either, my last check. So fingers crossed that one will get through without an issue.
Hopefully so. A second bill I'll quickly touch on, it was one of mine that I had worked on for about 3 or 4 years. A lot of bills don't make it across the finish line their first time. And this is more in the land use development side, but it's a pretty important bill. I would call it the most important growth management bill since 2012. Does a lot of things, but very briefly, what it does is it requires local governments to work better together when you have impact fee money coming in. Because you think about it, if you build a development in a city, that traffic isn't just stopping within the city boundaries. It's going into the county and maybe going into a different city. And some jurisdictions just are not doing a good job of appropriately sharing the money. And you even have some jurisdictions, mainly on the East Coast, in my example of a city development, the county is charging a separate impact fee, holding hostage the poor city property owner. So we cleaned all that up. That was even less controversial because all the stakeholders actually had to get them in a room. And we must have negotiated over 12 hours, the last 50 words of that bill. So that bill came through, hopefully will be signed by the governor. That was one of my bills that I'm very proud of. And then finally, I'll touch on real quickly, this bill has been signed, and I'll call it the squatters bill. It's an issue that has kind of popped up in Florida, has popped up in other states. I had frankly not heard about it a lot. The bill sponsor came to me. It was a very robust bill, Melissa. That did a bunch of things, including eliminating adverse possession. And I had a lot of hard discussions with the bill sponsor and others that we just can't eliminate that concept. That's an important concept in Florida law. But originally that bill tried to get rid of adverse possession.
Well, that's what brought it to my attention right away, was I'm like, whoa. Certainly in the title insurance world, we use adverse possession all the time to clear up title clouds, et cetera. So that's kind of a wide swath through historic real property law in Florida. So I'm glad you were able to do that. So how did you end up addressing the members' concerns?
So he was really concerned about the squatters issue. And frankly, going back to adverse possession, I had a line out my door. Of folks that were concerned about eliminating adverse possession. Didn't even know a lot of people knew about that, except for in our business. But, I sat down with the bill sponsor and I said, what is your concern? Your concern is that someone shows up at someone's house or their property and says, it's my property. And the sheriff's deputy comes in and doesn't know what to do and says, you guys go to court and you figure it out. So now you're in a lawsuit. You're trying to evict someone. So what we did, we stripped out the adverse possession stuff, and we really focused the bill on, all right, what are the clear factors that you can establish, and what do you maybe have to prove, whether it's a tax bill or a deed or something, that can show law enforcement quickly that this person that's in your living room doesn't belong there, and they can remove that person immediately without having to go to court. So that bill became, I think, a great bill that the governor signed and would address an emerging issue in Florida that probably would never have gotten off the ground if we kept that adverse possession stuff in there. So it takes work by a lot of people, including the bill sponsor. The bill sponsor, I frankly told the bill sponsor, I'm not going to air your bill with that piece in it. So, but he and I had a lot of discussions, and we may come back and look at adverse possession. And I said, look, is it a concept that may need to get amended or get clarified? Absolutely. Right. I'm happy to look at that. But getting rid of it would not be the answer.
Well, that's a great segue into the next question I wanted to ask you. And you mentioned that you chair the Civil Justice Subcommittee, which is one of the busier and more important committees, certainly from our industry standpoint, because generally every bill that touches real estate and transactions is going to go through civil justice. You all had to deal with a lot of bills this year. As we already mentioned, 1,902 bills were filed. About, I can't do math this fast, but 80 bills more than last year. So lots of bills. What's it like being chair? What's your role as chair of civil justice?
So it's an important role because you're chairing a pretty big committee. You obviously have members that are on that committee. You have the speaker's office that reference you bills. And I don't have the number in front of me, but there were a few hundred bills that were referenced, I believe, to civil justice. So I read them all. I talk to staff. I get briefed about them all. I sit down with the members. What are you trying to accomplish? And then I have to decide what bills I think are good policy and what bills I'm going to hear. I only have so much committee time, so I can't hear, nor should I hear, every bill. And I break down bills into kind of three buckets. And it's almost like the good, the bad, the ugly. But I'll call them the excellent bills, the really bad bills, and the middle bills. The excellent bills are almost ready for prime time. I'll get them cleared through the speaker's office. We'll get them on my agenda. We'll get them moving. The bad bills, I'm not going to move. And I try to have a conversation with the member that filed the bill because they use up a bill slot. It may be important to their district. We may have a different, maybe philosophical perspective on bills, or maybe a practical perspective. The notary bill is a perfect example. That was filed by a Republican. I don't just block Democrat bills. But I sit down with the member and explain, you know, why that, to me, that policy is not good. And I frankly tell them, look, I'm only the first person here. If you want to go to the chair of judiciary or you go to the speaker, you can have those conversations. But part of my job is to block bad legislation. And unfortunately, there is a lot of bad legislation that's filed. And that's the beauty of the committee process, is every bill has to make its way through two or three committees. And every one of those chairmen and the speaker gets a chance to amend it, gets a chance to block it or significantly revise it. And that's only talking about the House side. You got the Senate side as well. But a chairman's primary goal is to figure out what legislation should flow through that chair's committee and make sure that agenda along with those bills is run and run efficiently through the limited committee time we have during session.
Yeah, I have learned that chairmanships are very important. So to know who's chair of the committees that your bill is likely to go through is an important part of my advocacy role here at the fund, which is a great segue into the last thing I want to chat with you about, because I'd like to chat briefly about how the fund and fund members can best help good laws get passed. And I'm always bugging fund members. I just sent out a whole bunch of letters asking them to contribute to our political committee, which is called TITLE, T-I-T-L, Title Insurance Through Lawyers. So from your perspective, is that an effective thing for a fund member to do, to contribute to TITLE?
Look, I get it. No one likes to write a check, but it's incredibly important because that shows an investment by the fund or otherwise with a particular candidate. And I know the fund does a good job of identifying what candidates are good ones to make sure that a check is delivered to. I to this day, and I ran 6 years ago, I to this day remember the real property and probate and trust section gave me my very first check from a lobbying group. And you remember stuff like that. Campaigns are expensive, and you got a lot of things you got to worry about. But I do think it's a worthy investment. You got a lot of great members that probably haven't heard of the fund or title insurance, and it allows that introduction as well. And that you build those bridges and you build those connections through resources like that. And believe me, those members will not forget that, because a lot of them remember stuff like that, including me.
Thank you, Representative. All right, fund members out there listening, you heard it here. Please help me out when I send you that letter about contributing to Title. So we have run out of time. Rep. Robinson, I think we could have talked for another 30 minutes. There were only a couple of questions in the question panel, and I will respond to each one of those individually. So don't worry about that. Remember that we push the audio out on our podcast. So if you want to listen again or share it, it'll be available very shortly. And I always ask people to let me know if there's a topic you would like for us to address in one of these pop-up webinars. Just let me know, shoot me an email. So thanks to everyone that tuned in. A particular thanks to you, Rep. Robinson. Looking forward to seeing you soon. And as always, to everyone, thank you for your support of the fund.